Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It is Open Forum. We continue with our Open Forum. Any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, maybe you have a moral question, a philosophical question, a more generally religious question, they're all welcome, and you don't have to be Catholic to call. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour, excuse me, I got so excited about our guest this hour, is Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and author
I'm a guest this hour.
I was keeping that top secret.
I'm not the only guest.
You are the guest, Jimmy.
That was so top secret. All right. Well, then, in addition to Jimmy Akin, we have in studio with us the editor of just one of the finest magazines that you'll read. And it really is. Like, I'm not just saying that because they pay me to say that. Tim Ryland. Tim Ryland is the editor of Catholic Answers Magazine, and a new issue's coming out, Tim.
It is. I'm in the death throes of production on the March-April issue.
Death throes. You really make it sound like your job is fun.
Well,
there.
Your goons came and wrestled me away out of my office and dragged me here.
It's like an action movie, you know, right down to the wire.
Yeah. So what do you got in the upcoming issue?
Great stuff, as always. And I'm happy to agree with you that it's a great magazine. And I can say that without, you know, any prejudice, because I don't write it. I just edit it. So we have fantastic writers, fantastic theologians, thinkers, philosophers within our pages every month. The next issue is no exception. We have our own people who always write for us, which are usually the best in the country, I would say. But we've got an article by Trent Horn talking about things that saints never said.
You know, one of Trent's favorite topics.
Yeah. We hear attributions all the time, and they become popularly associated with people. Probably one of the most familiar that we've always heard is preach the gospel, use words if necessary.
Oh, yeah. St. Francis said that.
Of course, he didn't.
What? Wait, know. What?
Did not. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I knew that.
You guys know that, but a lot of us don't.
Many people don't know that, yeah.
So Trent has gone through, and his point, I think, is well taken. If we're going to be quoting the saints and leading people to the truth, we need to be truthful, you know, even to the point of
not making stuff up.
Yeah. Right. Right. But sometimes those there's just an accident. It gets attributed accidentally, and then it kind of snowballs.
That's mostly the case.
But the thing is, St. Francis was a great preacher.
That's
just not what he would say. He wouldn't say.
Yeah, that's right. I think he even makes that point. We have a wonderful article. I think Jimmy's mentioned it last week, but Jimmy's written one called Rome and the Church. And
I'm looking forward to this one.
It's really a wonderful, literal, linear exposition of how Rome, it's so much part of the Gospels and the New Testament, but we so seldom see it laid out, like what exactly happened, who was ruling and why, and how that impacted the gospel story.
I love those history ones.
The article goes back to the first encounters that the Jewish people had with the Romans in the Old Testament, and then it shows how it answers questions like how did they come to be in charge of Israel
during
Jesus' lifetime, and if Herod the Great was a Jewish king, why is Pontius Pilate a Roman governor there in the same place just a few decades later?
Yeah.
And Tim has done a really good job. He's laying out the magazine now. He's done a really good job creating a timeline for the article so you can see, not just read what happened in sequence from the article, but then see it visually laid out.
Right.
So how it all fits together on a timeline. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be very helpful to people.
What else you got, though? Yeah, I know you got more.
With our own folks, another wonderful article by Carlo Broussard, he's talking about the myth that science does away with God.
He told us that when he was in earlier this week that was coming out.
Yeah, that there's a philosophical—
It doesn't do away with God, it turns out.
Yeah, I'm glad you ruined it for us,
Jimmy.
Thanks. We were going to surprise the reader with that.
Folks,
but all right.
Don't even bother buying the issue at this point.
You know how
it ends. But interesting how the philosophical underpinnings of empirical science rest on philosophy. They can't be proved by science, and he does a very good job of laying that out. So we have a couple more. There's another one, The Five Myths of Evangelizing. We have a man who's written for us in the past, has written many books. His name's Frederick Marks, a very learned man on the East Coast, and he is a street evangelizer. He's uh-huh. out there every week evangelizing on the street, so he's learned a lot of lessons. And he explodes some of the myths about that you typically hear, like, you can't impose your views on other people. And he explains why we need to, of course, in charity, but it's that type of thing where you hear, you shouldn't impose yourself on people, or you shouldn't speak to the truth to people if they don't look willing to hear it. But always, of course, with charity in mind. But it's a very nuts and bolts article. So I'm looking forward to people reading that.
This whole thing makes me think we should have Tim Ryland on more. It's nice to have you in here.
Well, thanks. Thanks. Well,
I think people realize what an important presence you are here to the whole apostolate of Catholic Answers, as I have discovered in my first year here.
Now, is that going to cost me another $20?
Yeah, right. That's $20 for that one.
Okay. Well, I've got a question. Now, normally I have to answer the questions here, but now I'm going to ask one. So if I'm a person in the audience and I want to get this issue that Tim has just been talking about with all these great articles in it, number one, can I do that?
Nope, it's
still
just
time?
For us. You cannot.
And how do I do that?
I know you can get Catholic Answers Magazine.
Jimmy,
how do you
Aiken,
get it?
Thank you for asking those incisive questions. It should have been the first thing out of my mouth. Go to Catholic.com, as we tell you to do so often, but /magazine, or at the top of the page, there's a magazine selection. And then that'll take you. You have to go down one more page on the left-hand side. It'll say subscribe. We are running a special that was so popular at Christmas time. We've extended it. The $39.95 annual subscription rate has been dropped 25%. So you can get the magazine for $29.95 for 6 action-packed issues, which is a great promotion that I think we'll be running till the summer. But don't put it off, because this is a great issue coming up.
And it's about to go to the printers, so there's time limited if you want to get it as your first issue in your subscription. You can also call 888-291-8000. That's the normal order number. You hear it all the time here on Catholic Answers. So you can go to either shop.catholic.com or just call 888-291-8000, and we have folks standing by to take your order right now.
Thank you, Second Timothy.
That's why he's the man. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Why do we call you? Do you know? Do you want to say why we call you Second Timothy?
Well, Tim Staples is First Timothy. I mean, no one's going to.
No, I see you worked here before Tim Staples, though. You should be First Timothy, and he should be Second Timothy.
But I'm such a humble man, Jimmy.
It's wonderful how you talk about your humility, I share that.
Well,
Tim Ryland.
Appreciate your kind words. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, it's a wonderful magazine. It really is. And you know, a lot of magazines today are fluff. I mean, they're, and you really feel like you've gotten something
especially when you get through a mulcher.
Thank you, Jimmy, for your helpful comments.
Speaking of mulchers, I'm going to get back to shredding the magazine. So,
Thanks, guys.
And thank you for asking me back. I'll be here every day.
Okay, good. Okay. Every single day, we'll have a segment with Tim Ryland now. It's a brand new feature here on Catholic Answers Live. Thanks, Tim Ryland.
Okay, thanks.
Again, the number 888-318-7884. Open forum means any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. Jimmy Aiken, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, is our guest for this hour, taking your questions. Again, 888-318-7884. 318-7884. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back to tackle lots and lots of questions with Jimmy Aiken right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Aiken is coming right back.
Hi, this is Tim Staples, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off free shipping and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. we find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. We are moments away from the Groovy Thursday music, so I'm getting fired up for that. It better happen, Nick. 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. If you would like to share a testimony of what Catholic Answers has meant in your life, we'd be very grateful for that. We use those, as you can probably guess, to help share the program with other people and help promote the program to those who may not be familiar with how it affects lives. If you would just like to leave a voicemail, radio testimony about what the radio show has meant to you, 619-387-7200 is the number, 619-387-7200. We're very grateful to get those, and we're very grateful to have the opportunity to share them with other people. 619-387-7200. This hour, open forum means any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, we would love to get to. And Jimmy, I have my own question I would like to start with.
What's that?
There are these videos on YouTube that show the Vatican, and there's a very formal mass going on. And it sounds like, and this is actually what people are saying, it sounds like it's a some kind of consecration or invocation of Lucifer. Mm-hmm. And the claim is that this is Pope Francis and the Vatican worshiping the devil. So have you heard of this, and what's going on?
Yeah. So there are a bunch of videos like this on YouTube. And in fact, coincidentally, you and I were watching one together earlier today. And
it shocked me.
and that particular video, before I address the issue specifically, but that particular video claimed that, at the beatification mass for Popes John the 23rd and John Paul II, or the canonization mass for them, that there was this invocation of Satan. And the thing is, whoever made that video was either lying knowingly or just really wrong, because the front part of that video has footage from the canonization mass, which was held outdoors.
Oh yeah,
and in the daytime.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then when they shift to show you the and you can watch the whole canonization mass on YouTube. Just type in John Paul II canonization mass. It'll come right up. It's like 3 hours long. You can watch the whole thing. It is all outside. But then when they show this alleged Luciferian invocation, it's clearly inside, and it's night because everyone's holding candles.
Yeah.
And what this really is now, got to explain where the word Lucifer comes from, because originally it had nothing to do with the devil. Nothing. It comes from two Latin roots, lux, which means light, and fere, which means to carry or to bear or to bring. And so Lucifer means light bringer, and it's just the Latin word for the morning star, the planet Venus when it appears in the east. Venus is the brightest planet in the sky, and when it appears in the east, it comes up just before sunrise, and so it heralds the dawn.
Yes.
And so that's why Latins called it Lucifer, or the light bringer, because it announced the coming of the dawn. You know who else called it that? The Greeks. Only in Greek, they would call it phosphoros. because phos is light
yeah.
and pherein means to bring or to carry. And so it's light bringer in Greek. It's light bringer in Latin. It has other names too. But it has it. That's where the word comes from. It's just a word for the morning star. Didn't have anything to do with the devil. But because of how prominent the morning star is, it gets used in the Bible as a symbol religiously, because it's a big, obvious thing. Everyone's familiar with it in the ancient world, especially when they didn't have YouTube videos to distract themselves. They'd go watch the sky at night and early in the dawn and stuff. And so they'd see the morning stars, something everybody knew about. And the Bible uses it as a symbol. In Isaiah 14, it's used as a symbol of the king of Babylon, who had been the literal human king who had been persecuting the Jewish people. And so in that context, it talks about it's God gives the Jewish people or the Israelite people a taunt that they can use on the day that the king of Babylon has his downfall. And one of the things that they say in this taunt song, and taunt songs in the ancient world, they're kind of like rap battles.
Oh,
you know, where you
yeah.
put somebody down in a humorous
right.
way. Well, the king of Babylon is a king, and he's very puffed up and prideful, like, you know, kings tend to be, you know. And so he's compared to the morning star, but then even though he's like the morning star, he's fallen from the sky. He's fallen from heaven on the day of his downfall.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the taunt song. In the Christian age, that then got picked up by some people and interpreted as a symbol of Satan. And that's where you get the Lucifer connection, because the king of Babylon's being compared to Lucifer, the morning star.
Right.
But originally, it's just the king of Babylon.
Yeah.
Now, you might think, oh, well, if you know, the morning star is used to symbolize this prideful pagan king,
yeah.
and if Christians have used it as a symbol beyond that for the devil, then maybe we shouldn't use this as a symbol in the liturgy or anything. Well, except for the fact it's also used in the New Testament as a positive symbol.
Yeah.
And so in Peter's letters, he talks about how it's used as a symbol of enlightenment, where he talks about how we should meditate, say, on the Word of God until the morning star rises in our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the book of Revelation, Jesus promises to give the morning star – this is in chapter 2, 28. He promises to give the morning star to the one who overcomes, and he only gives good things to the ones who overcome in Revelation. So
yeah.
we know it's a good thing. Well, guess what it is? It gets revealed later on in chapter 22 of Revelation. If you look at 22:16, the morning star is Jesus Christ himself.
Yeah.
He says, I am the bright and morning star.
Yeah.
So this is an I am saying of Jesus in Revelation. And so that's the sense in which this term is being used in a liturgical prayer called the Exultet. It's a prayer that's said at Easter time, when the Easter candle has been lit, symbolizing the light of Christ coming into the world. And at that point in the liturgy, the deacon says a prayer which basically asks that the candle still be found burning by the morning star, the one true morning star
yeah.
that never sets, your son, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And so it's really clear what's happening here is this is just using the symbol from the book of Revelation of Jesus as the morning star in this prayer. It's not incidentally just said by Catholics. Anglicans, Lutherans, Methodists, other Christians have this prayer too. They don't typically say it in Latin, but they have it
right.
and they invoke Jesus under the symbol of the morning star. And that's all that's happening here. There's no devil worship going on. It's just using the ordinary Latin word for the morning star to talk yeah. about Jesus based on his own declaration, I am the bright and morning star.
Amen. Right. So you gave me a more abbreviated explanation mm-hmm. After we watched that video.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, I need to know if this is true. I have to ask someone who's even smarter than Jimmy Akin.
Uh-huh.
So who is smarter than Jimmy Akin?
God?
No, well,
I pray about it.
Yeah. No, I ask.
God is definitely smarter than me. I mean, like, way.
I ask Google.
Way. Oh, okay. And
I said, I went to Google Translate, and they have a part where you can translate Latin into English.
Uh-huh.
So I put a lowercase L, Lucifer,
right,
in the Latin side.
And, right. And that's because it is lowercase in the Latin prayer.
Right.
Because it's not a proper name.
I didn't
want
to use a proper name. No.
Yeah.
So I used lowercase Lucifer. And guess what? How Google translates it.
How did Google translate it?
Daystar.
Daystar. Yeah, exactly.
So even the all I don't know if I want to say all seeing, but
all indexing Google.
Yeah, the all indexing Google, the index of all knowledge said, yeah, Jimmy Akin's right. So that's good to know that we're not worshiping Lucifer.
It's really good to know.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Jimmy. Lots and lots of calls. Let's go to Sophia in Fredericksburg, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Sophia, thank you for waiting. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. I was just calling because I wanted to see, as being a Catholic, if it's true that, like, making at weddings, like, dancing, is that bad? Or going to a, you know, birthday party that, you know, they make, like DJs or, you know, graduations, things like that, you know.
Are you asking, is dancing prohibited for Catholics?
Yes.
Oh, I hope not. I'd have to change my plans for this weekend. No, there's nothing wrong with dancing. Now, there are immodest forms of dance, and those are things that are morally problematic, but there's nothing wrong with dancing in and of itself. Humans have a natural impulse to move their bodies to music. That's all dancing is just moving your body to music, just like they have a natural impulse to sing, to use another part of their body, their vocal tract, to make music. And so it's natural, given the way humans are. And it's not just humans. Other species dance too, and other species sing too, like birds. So this is something that God has built into us just as part of our nature, just like birds sing and bees dance. Humans do both. And it's one of the gifts that God has given us, and its value is acknowledged in the Bible. If you look at Ecclesiastes, one of the books of the Old Testament, you look at Ecclesiastes 3, the author is very clear, says there is a time to dance. And so just like other things that are part of human life, rejoicing, dancing, working, resting, weeping, all of these things are part of the human experience, and there's a place for them, and that's true of dancing as well. So it, as long as you're doing it in a chaste and modest fashion, as long as it's wholesome, family-friendly dancing, then it's absolutely fine, just like any other form of wholesome, family-friendly entertainment.
Does that ease your mind a bit, Sophia?
Well, kind of, but, like, how about clubbing?
Clubbing?
Oh. Is that, like, you know, because my brother, he's a Christian. Mm-hmm. He goes to Greater Grace Christian Church. Mm-hmm. And he tells me that dancing is, you know, it's bad, that, you know, Christians, they don't do it. And, you know, he's just saying that that's bad. And, like, where there's, like, alcohol and drugs involved, he says that if mm-hmm. I go to a club or, you know, weddings or something, that there is, you know, alcohol involved, that that's bad. Because let's say that God, you know, when it's, you know, when he comes to the world mm-hmm. and I'm at a dance, that uh-huh. he's not gonna accept me because, you know,
okay.
I'm at a club instead of, you know.
Well, let's talk about that, because it sounds like your brother is mashing up some different issues together. I mean, the initial question was about dancing. Now we've got clubs and drugs and alcohol in the mix as well. But if we take these issues one at a time and look at them, well, is dancing a problem in and of itself? If you're not doing it in the context of clubs and dancing and clubs and drugs and alcohol. Well, no, dancing is fine. Okay, let's look at alcohol. Alcohol is something that God alcoholic beverages are something that are endorsed in the Bible. In fact, the Bible says that God gave us wine to gladden man's heart. So there's no problem in principle with the use of alcohol. Again, it's a matter of moderation. There's a difference between having a drink or two and gladdening your heart and getting falling down drunk so that you lose your moral faculties and go commit immoral acts. Well, one has to be willing to make these distinctions. And you can't simply say, well, all alcohol is bad, because our Lord himself set us an example here. If you look in John's Gospel, in John chapter 2, at the wedding at Cana, this is Jesus' first miracle in John's Gospel. John makes a big point out of this. And Jesus is at a wedding. And now, of course, Jewish weddings, like a lot of weddings, had dancing at them, and they also had alcohol at them. And in fact, the people at this wedding have consumed all of the wine, and Jesus' mother Mary comes to him and says they don't have any wine anymore. And Jesus initially seems a little reluctant to perform a miracle, but he goes ahead and does one and makes more wine so that the party can keep going. And we know it's alcoholic wine for a reason I'll talk about on the other side of the break.
Can you hang on till after the break, Sophia?
Yes.
All right. No dancing in the meantime. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed a list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answer's brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
EWTN's cathedrals across America and the Diocese of Jefferson City, Missouri invite you to a celebration of apostolic succession as they welcome their new apostle and shepherd, Father W. Sean McKnight. From the Cathedral of St. Joseph, the Mass of Ordination and Installation of Father W. Sean McKnight as the fourth bishop of Jefferson City. Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, here on EWTN Television and Radio Classics.
Just let it play, Nick. Don't cut it short. I'm dancing now. Do not tell Sophia. How can you not dance when the groovy Thursday music is playing? Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest this hour. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. When we went to the break, you were talking with Sophia about dancing, and then that got into some talk of wine. And how do we know that it was really alcoholic wine?
Because in John chapter 2 at the wedding at Cana, where Jesus performs a miracle to create more wine out of water, the servants bring the major domo of the event a taste of it. and he declares it to be excellent wine. And he says that normally what happens is the people will bring out the good wine first. And then after people have lost their taste, they'll bring out the cheap stuff.
Oh.
But he compliments these people here for, he thinks, saving the good wine until later. Well, that tells us that what he means by good wine includes alcohol. Because if you just drink grape juice, you can drink grape juice all day and you don't lose your sense of taste.
Yeah.
So it has to be alcoholic wine that he's envisioning as the good wine, and he identifies the wine that Jesus made as good wine. So Jesus himself, in his first miracle in the Gospel of John, makes wine of an alcoholic nature at a wedding so people can keep drinking. So there is a legitimate use for wine. Now, again, there are warnings in Scripture against abusing wine.
Right.
But if you're not abusing wine, if you're either at a party and you're not drinking or you're only drinking in moderation, you're fine. God does not have a problem with that. So that was issue number two. Issue number three was drugs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there are legitimate uses for drugs, including ones that have effects like morphine and so forth. It can be legitimately used as a painkiller.
Right.
But if you're getting high on it and ruining your life, well, then that's a problem. But then again, are you the one who's doing it? I don't actually tend to. I haven't seen a lot of people on morphine, in fact, dancing. They tend to get sleepy.
Yeah, I think morphine is an anti-dancing drug.
Yeah, but it's a separate issue than dancing, and you have to say, well, am I the one doing this, or is someone else doing it? If it's someone else doing it, then you are not doing it. You are not displeasing God. Then we had the final issue of clubbing. Well, that can mean a bunch of different things. Fundamentally, clubbing is going out and being with other people and having a party. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with going out and being with other people and having a party. The question is, what are you doing at that party? If you're just dancing, well, that's fine. If you're drinking in moderation, that's fine. If you're having fun, you know, with other people, you're not hurting anyone, that's fine. But if you're dancing in an improper way and you're looking to go have a sexual encounter with someone and you're drinking to excess and you're abusing drugs, well, then that kind of clubbing is bad and God's not going to be happy with that. But if you're not doing those things, then you're not doing those things.
What if you're listening to some of this funky new music like the Bee Gees and stuff like that? Is that all right?
Music is sound waves. Oh. And it's going to depend on what the sound waves are, why you're listening to them, and what they're tempting you to do, if anything.
All right.
If all you're doing is being tempted to dance and have fun,
yeah,
fine. If you're being tempted to abuse drugs or go have sex with someone you're not married to, then that's a problem.
All right. Sophia, thanks for hanging around. Now, how does all that strike you, Sophia?
Well, that's it explains it because my brother explained it differently because he brought up that scripture that, you know, y'all just said about John chapter 2, mm-hmm, that he was at a wedding, and he says that he was not. That yes, he was at a wedding, and that Mary went and told him that there was no wine, and he said, "Woman, it's not my time yet."
Yeah, but then he goes ahead and makes the wine anyway, and it's alcoholic.
Right, and he says that he wasn't attended at the dance, like he wasn't participating. He was just there in the kitchen, which I kind of told him, "Explain to me, how do you know he was in the kitchen?"
Yeah,
you know, like. That doesn't say that he was in the kitchen. I mean, neither. It says that he was there hanging out in the wedding. You know, I mean, he was there because, you know, obviously they called him to come and do the wine. And, you know, like I said.
Your brother, I'm afraid, is reading into the situation. There's a saying in some quarters, what you can't show, you don't know. What we do know is that Jesus made alcoholic wine at this event and that he had no problem attending an ordinary festive Jewish wedding. If you want to show that he refused to bless certain aspects of that event, then the burden of proof is on you, and you're going to need some evidence to show that, and your brother doesn't have that because this passage doesn't go into those subjects.
Okay, Sophia?
Yes, thank you so much for answering the question. Y'all kind of, you know, gave me a good ease there and another way to explain to him so he could see what I'm trying to, you know, you know, yep. trying to show him, you know. But
awesome.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sophia. But stay away from the Bee Gees. That is some crazy stuff. That
they have some early music that's actually really innocent.
The Night
Fever. I mean, they have a song about going for a drive on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually really a fan of the Bee Gees.
Uh-huh.
I like the Bee Gees a
Did
lot.
You ever have Cucumber Castle?
No.
It was one of their first albums.
Really? Yeah. They made a lot of albums.
They did.
Yeah. There are some of my favorite Australians. And I really like Australians. I just want to let you know that today, February 1st,
okay.
kicking off the 20 Answers Challenge, the 20 Answers Sampler, this stack of all these books is 26 books in the 20 Answers series. And we're offering it. I think for the rest of the month, for 60% off the normal price, we're also offering free shipping of the sampler. So you just pay 40% of the cost of it, and we send it out to you. We're challenging you to read all 26 books by the end of Eastertide. That's May 20, by the end of the Easter season, if you took part in the challenge. Last year, we have six new books in the series. So I don't know what that information is supposed to do for you, except to say maybe you want to challenge yourself to read those six. 60% savings, free shipping. You just go to shop.catholic.com, shop.catholic.com to get yours and start on the 20 Answers Challenge. Today, we go now to Leo in New York, New York, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Leo, thank you for your call. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
We can,
yes. You're on the air. What's your question?
Yes, my question, and by the way, God bless you for your ministry. I really like it a lot.
Thank you.
I am not a Catholic. I am a Eastern Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Christian. And my question initially was the Eastern Catholic Church that is under the Pope, that's part of the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church as well. That was my initial question. I'm not going to take up too much of your time because you probably have a lot more phone calls. But listening, I was listening the last hour because I was waiting on the phone, and a lot of people that called up, they weren't Catholic. They were like so-called born-again Christian Protestants and Anglicans. They were saying how, you know, they were giving different, and the answer, the gentleman before, I forgot his name,
Leo, just so you're aware, we're getting kind of close to a break time. What's your question? I want to make sure I can give you a good answer.
He put the Eastern Orthodox Church in the same category as the other one, and this is all in love, I'm saying in charity, like St. Paul says. We learned that we were all part of the same church, and then in the year 1000-something, we split. Isn't that correct? We are not really like the Protestants and the Anglicans. We were there, so-called, when the Catholics were there, too. Am I correct, or...?
Well, so the way we'd look at this as Catholics is originally there was one church that Jesus founded, and at a certain point in its history, and this is often dated to the year 1054, but that's really just a convenient kind of marker. It really didn't happen in 1054. But over a period of time, Christians in the East and Christians in the West had drifted apart. And by 1054, there was a recognition that there were some serious issues between the two communities. They weren't getting along. And from a Catholic point of view, we'd be perfectly happy to acknowledge that our Eastern Orthodox brethren are, number one, fellow brethren in Christ, just like our Protestant brethren are. Number two, Eastern Orthodox are retain apostolic succession, so they have all seven sacraments are valid, including the priesthood, and they share many more elements in common with the Catholic Church than people coming from the Protestant communities do, and that's wonderful. Those are all elements of grace and truth that God wants all Christians to have, and in the Eastern Orthodox Communion, they have been retained to a much greater degree than in some other Christian communions. And so all of that is reason to praise God. At the same time, not every element that Jesus wanted all members of his church to have has been retained, such as union with the successor of Peter. That's an important one. He did make Peter the rock on which he would build his church. And for Christians to not be in union with Peter's successor is something that doesn't correspond to Christ's plan for his church, because this was part of how he constructed his church. So we'd say that our Eastern Orthodox brethren are valid Christians. They have apostolic succession. They have all of the sacraments. And hopefully one day we'll find a way to be fully reconciled so they can also have full union with the successor of Peter and all of their brethren in the Catholic Church as well.
Leo, I have to leave it there and say thank you for that call. I hope that was helpful. But we do, as Jimmy said, have to go to a break. So we'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call and ask Jimmy your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I'm here to tell you about the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how it works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price. Then you can challenge yourself to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off, free shipping, and over 500 answers to questions you've had about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open Forum, Jimmy Akin, our guest. Lots of folks on the line, so we'll get to those calls right away. Let's go to Connor in Brooklyn, New York, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thanks for downloading the Catholic Answers Live app, Connor. Everybody should. Your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
Doing just fine. How can I help you?
My father had a heart attack last year.
Oh,
and
I'm so
he's
sorry.
Fine now, but
oh, good.
I believe his lifestyle led him to that because he's, kind of obese and he's an alcoholic. And my parents believed him surviving the heart attack to be a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, why would God make a miracle that seems to erode his free will? Because he made those choices, and it seems wrong to me to have God make a miracle that that stops somebody's free choices from going to the natural progression.
Okay. So let's suppose I don't know if you're married or not, Connor, but let's suppose that let's suppose you get married, and let's suppose you have a child. Let's say you've got a son, and your son, at the point of our thought experiment, is 3 years old, and he is a rambunctious, energetic three-year-old. He loves being out in the yard and playing and running all over the place and just having a great time, and you've told him, do not run into the street. But he one day makes a choice. He knows, you know, you've said don't run into the street, and he proceeds to do so anyway, and he's about to be hit by a car. And you just happen to be within reach to where you can grab him and pull him out of the way of that car. Well, looking at it one way, you could say, you know, I told my son that he should not run into the street, and yet of his own free will, he's gone and done this. And so it would be wrong of me to snatch my son out of the way of this oncoming car. I should just let the car plow him over. You could also look at the situation and say, you know, I love my son. And even though he's done something really foolish, and even though he's disobeyed me, I really care about him, and I don't want him to die right now. I want to give him another chance. I want him to have a longer life. I want him to have more of the gift of life. So even though even though he's disobeying me, even though he's made this choice, I'm going to snatch him out of the way anyway. And that's something that is certainly a reasonable choice for any parent to make. And that includes our Father in heaven. So even when we, as foolish children, have made lifestyle choices that we shouldn't have made, it's still possible for God, out of love for us, to help us out so that we don't bear the full burden of those choices, so that we don't have all of the consequences of them. Now, in some occasions, God does allow us to bear consequences from our choices, but out of his mercy, he also lessens those consequences so that we don't have to. And if we take it up a notch from just lifestyle choices of a physical nature, which frankly, I would urge caution about, you know, judging someone too harshly because, say, they're obese. Because the fact is, a lot of the diet advice that's been out there in American culture for the last 40 years has been dead wrong and will actually encourage people to gain weight, even though they're desperately trying to take it off. I know that from personal experience. Also, I'd be hesitant to judge people too harshly when it comes to alcohol use, because even though, yes, alcohol abuse is something that people need to avoid and need to get over, it's something that does have a kind of self-perpetuating cycle that can be hard for people to break out of. And so once you're in that cycle, it can be difficult for people to get out of it. And so I urge a little caution in how severely we regard people who are struggling with issues like that. Having said that, these are just physical issues and are of a lesser order than the fact we are all sinners. And we all have committed, at one point or another, mortal sins, just about all of us anyway, that would send us to hell if – and we did them of our own free will – and they would send us to hell if God applied strict justice to us and didn't intervene to stop us from experiencing the spiritual consequences of our free will choices. But the good news is God does love us, and he loves us enough that he sent his own son, Jesus, to die on the cross for us so that we could be saved from the consequences of our choices, and so that we wouldn't have to experience the pain of eternal separation from God. And rather than seeing that as a violation of justice, I would view that as a marvelous cause for thanksgiving. And so I would look at God saving your father from some of the consequences of prior lifestyle choices in the same light that I would look at God saving you or me or anybody else from the consequences of our choices in general, including our spiritual choices that would otherwise lead us to separation from God.
Okay, Connor?
That sounds fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much for that call. Let's go to Anonymous in Ontario, Canada, also listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Thanks for downloading the app. Anonymous, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi. My question's about assisted suicide and euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Canada, it's legal here, and the College of Physicians in my province has actually made it a requirement that doctors provide an effective referral for if a patient asks for assisted suicide or euthanasia, whether the doctor objects or not. Mm-hmm. And the court just upheld that. So my question is, you know, in talking about, you know, and my understanding is that from a Catholic perspective, you know, it would be wrong for a doctor to give a referral to a patient to go get assisted suicide or euthanasia. If I were talking with someone, or if you're talking with someone who, like, has no background, you know, in theology or Catholic, who's just kind of a regular person on the street, and they're like, you know, well, what's the big deal? You're just, you know, telling them where they can access another doctor. Like, how would you explain why that's a problem or problematic?
Okay, well, I would shift the circumstances a little bit as a way of helping that person understand the nature of the problem. Suppose we're not talking about voluntary suicide. Suppose that we're talking about flat out assassination. Okay, you know, killing people who do not want to be killed against their will. And suppose it doesn't matter what my profession is, I'm just some person, but I'm legally required, if I don't want to perform an assassination, that I'm required to tell a person where they can go get an assassin. Well, I think most of us would agree that if someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, Jimmy Akin, I want my wife and children killed. Can you do that for me?" That I should say, "No, I can't." And it would, and not only should I be allowed to say, "No, I can't kill your wife and children for you," I should not be required by law to say, "But there's this guy downtown that will kill your wife and children for you, and here's his name and address and his website. Go to it." Because what I'm being required to do in that situation is, number one, cooperate with a morally evil act, namely killing this guy's wife and children. And secondly, I'm being required to violate my own conscience. And if you have a conscience at all, then you should recognize that there are situations, and they may vary from person to person depending on the way your own individual conscience is formed, but there are situations where you feel strongly enough about an issue that you say, "This is just wrong, and I should not be required to violate my conscience on this." And anybody who has a conscience, anybody who's not a psychopath, will be able to think of such situations. And so I would invite the person to think, you know, what do you care about strongly enough that you would say, you know, the law should not require me to do this? And if the person has a conscience, they'll be able to think about it if they're willing to devote more than a couple seconds to it, because such examples should readily spring to mind.
What do you think, Anonymous?
No, thanks. That sounds great. And can I actually ask you guys and anybody who's listening to also pray for the doctors who are kind of stuck in this bind here, because
yeah,
I really feel for them.
Absolutely. And I was also going to recommend, now this is here in the United States, but there's an organization called the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Their website is ncbcenter.org, I believe.
Yes, .org, right.
And they're bioethics experts, and they could potentially provide some resources for physicians in Canada to document, like, what the Holy See has said in terms of conscience protections and things like that. And so I would suggest them as a resource for some follow-up.
Thanks, Anonymous. We do, in fact, appreciate the call. The contemporary kind of move towards
compelling people to do things against their conscience is really totalitarian.
Yeah,
and
it is
frightening.
It strikes me that it meets up with what Pope Benedict was talking about before he was a pope. When he talked about the dictatorship of relativism, mm-hmm. this idea that, well, there is no real good or bad, so you need to do. You need to participate in these things. We have to be very vigilant.
Yeah.
That we're not participating in things that are. I mean,
yeah, and there's you know, there's more to you know, say on these questions. Like, if there's no right and wrong, if it's all relative, then why do you care? I refer or not.
Yeah.
If there is moral right and wrong, then you should respect my understanding of right and wrong, just like you want me to understand and respect yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why we have now a standing committee on religious freedom at the U.S. Catholic Bishops, and it's become an issue of our times. Jimmy Akin, thank you very much for another fine hour.
My pleasure. I just wish we could do this a little more.
Oh, we should do some more.
We do Catholic Answers more right now for everyone who's watching us on Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope?
All right, if you're watching us online, we're going to hang around. We'll keep the microphones on, we'll keep the cameras on, and we'll keep talking. Join us tomorrow, another fantastic edition. Father Mike Schmitz will be here tomorrow to talk about his brand new book, Made for Love. We'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.